You know, if I could wave a magic wand, I'd be asking myself a question: how could I create a space where everyone can truly belong and perform at their best? That's a question I'd be asking. I wouldn't be asking, how much money can I make this quarter? You know, that's a byproduct of good work and obviously having a good product to fit the market. But if you have a product that fits a market and you're making revenue, ask yourself, is this a place, is this an organization that everyone can truly belong and feel welcome, to feel like they could bring their whole self to work?
Welcome to Invisible Not Broken. Today we're talking about improving the workplace for people with invisible disabilities, active listening, and advocacy through storytelling. Our host, Monica, is joined by consultant and podcast host, Tim Reitzma, who lives with Crohn's disease.
I love the countdown. I feel the pressure when I see those numbers going down to when we get to top.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel, if I feel less pressure or more pressure when you see the numbers, hey?
I mean, you're actually a podcast host, so you know this experience of like having the whole pre-chat where you're like, oh, this is all flowing. And then there's like the countdown. You're like, I think I'm a human. I think I remember my name. I may just be possums like strung together in a human suit, but we'll try. We can do this.
The countdown, it just all of a sudden brings seriousness, doesn't it? So we're going to have fun. We're going to have a good time and forget the countdown happened.
Gravity of like an audience. I think that's the problem. It's like all of a sudden it's a whole talk with everyone, which you are used to because you run a podcast. But I wanted to talk to you first about Crohn's. As part of why I really wanted to get you on the podcast is we haven't had anyone with Crohn's on here in a while. And as you know, there are so many things you have to think about all day with Crohn's. So can you tell me a little bit about like how you got diagnosed?
Yeah, I was diagnosed many years ago, over half my life. So in my teens, had some issues, some bowel issues, some pain. And so the doctors thought it was appendicitis. So I went to the hospital, they cut me open and realized my appendix was fine. They decided to take it anyways and cut me open a little bit more and just poke around and see what else is going on in there. And that was the start of my journey of diagnosis of Crohn's. And it took quite some time to actually get a diagnosis, but for the most part, it was controlled by medication, definitely not by diet. I was in my teens. I ate anything and everything. But, you know, I guess for the most part, it was, you know, they put me on some meds and I went about my life. So
as a teenager, I'm just thinking of the sheer horror I felt about anything body in my teen years. How was that when you're dealing with something that, I mean, kids are mean, people are really, really mean. How did that work for you? And is there any advice you'd have for parents or teenagers or young people who are kind of going through this now?
Yeah, honestly, I don't remember much. And maybe as I blocked it, maybe I need to seek some therapy to understand what actually happened. I remember being picked on a lot throughout high school, through those years. And part of it was because of my Crohn's and bowel issues. And, you know, when you talk about bowels, it makes people uncomfortable. And all the things that come along with bowels tend to make people uncomfortable. My advice for parents, especially if you've got children going through a diagnosis of IBD, IBS, educate yourself and encourage your children to own their voice. And it's hard. It's super challenging, and there will be people too, and there will be children and people that will kind of try to poke fun at you and at it. But having that conversation with your child to encourage them that, you know, this is maybe part of who you are. So let's embrace that. And how can we now move past that so it doesn't define you?
We're going to have a whole talk about HR stuff, but one of the things that I wanted to bring your HR expertise back to is to advice for teachers, because these are students who are in a classroom and those teachers can decide whether or not those kids can avoid an accident or not. Do you have any advice for like people who are in charge of that space?
Oh man, the word that's coming up is ignorance. And I don't know why the word ignorance is coming up.
It's a good word for this.
It's, you know, like let's put all the politically correct stuff aside. You know, as a parent advocating for your children, as a teenager or a young child, maybe you don't know how to advocate for yourself, don't know exactly what you need. So parents, you got to step up, and teachers, those people who have a lot of pressure and a lot of stress to teach our young ones, believe these kids and work with the parents to come up with a plan. You know, I have two kids and one struggles, and we have sat down with the teacher and said, hey, this is what he's struggling with. We're working through some stuff. And he was completely receptive. Send us update emails and let us know that he actually has an action plan with our child. That's what you need to do, especially when it comes to Crohn's. Sometimes with Crohn's, you can't control your bowels. You might need to run to the washroom multiple times a day. And the thing with Crohn's is it affects everyone differently. For me, I've had multiple surgeries. For me, a good day is, you know, 6 times to the washroom, and bad day could be upwards of 20 times. So think of a young person who's growing up, struggling to figure out their own identity and has bowel issues. So pay attention, listen, get curious. Hey, student, hey, parent, what do you need? So important.
In so many ways. I just wanted to throw out there, we're in this new era post, well, not post-COVID, we're still done with COVID, but we got a whole bunch of really good online schools. So if your child is having issues being at school where 20 times a day is cutting into their learning time, I just wanted to throw out there, and I am not sponsored by them, it's just where my child goes to school. There's a Montessori school online for high school, kindergarten through high school, and there's a whole bunch of really good online things. My child has POTS and can faint very easily, so it just wasn't feasible for my child to go to an in-person high school. So I just wanted to throw that out there, but there are some really good online school systems.
Yeah, there's alternatives that I think, you know, as a caregiver of someone who lives with a condition, an illness, or disease, you know, figuring out what works for you, what works best for your child, and advocating. You know, I'm all about, we have to advocate for ourselves, is because who's going to? Who else is going to? So advocate for ourselves, advocate for those who are in our care. It's really important.
Talk about advocating, because that's a theme for you, and I love that. What does that look like for you in, let's start with you as a parent, and maybe what you might have wished your parents had known to do?
Yeah, so for me, advocacy has been a real journey. You know, even before advocating on behalf of my child, I think it was 2023, I needed surgery. I was so sick. My entire intestine was inflamed with Crohn's, and it was a month before surgery, and somebody said to me, I hear you go for surgery. You look fine. You look great. Are you sure you need surgery? And that was a real turning point for me, and even to launch into my own advocacy and starting my own podcast and starting my own website about this, because what many of us live with is not visible from the outside. And so when we think of something that's visible, if I'm in an arthritis flare and I'm walking with a cane, somebody's likely going to give up their seat on the train or the bus and allow me to sit. But if I'm experiencing severe blood loss or anemia or just feeling rough, but I look fine, will people have that same reaction? And so for me, that was a real turning point of, I'm just tired of saying I'm fine when I'm actually not. And so even with our children, we're teaching them to say, and it's hard, they're young, to step into, how are you feeling? How are you doing? What do you need? And bringing that into their classroom, talking about it with their friends and their teachers. And this is where, as us as parents, we've really stepped in and helped, because they're young, they're little, and they don't quite know how. But I think if they can understand this at a young age, they're going to excel. They're going to not be afraid. And I just tell people, imagine a world where our children aren't afraid to say, hey, this is what I live with. And the reaction they get is, thanks for trusting me. What do you need? That's the world I want my kids to grow up in.
It's made me cry right there. It's just that thought. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. I think of my journey and the discrimination and the shame and the fear that I've experienced. And I just, maybe I'm just trying to protect my kids, which I think, you know, maybe a lot of parents would resonate with. It's, how do we be a catalyst of change? And we don't need to think necessarily on a grand scale, but even in our school systems, with our friend groups, with our workplaces. So if we have to step out to bring our child to a medical appointment, it doesn't get seen as a weakness or, oh, you better take that 1 hour time unpaid now because you're now caring for someone. It's, how do we say, yeah, let's create a place for you to thrive. And we know that you work hard, so don't worry about it. We got you.
It makes me very much miss the days where we had work from home. That was such a better experience in my household, with 2 sick people and my husband being able to work from home. He didn't miss days because he could schedule everything around all of our doctor's appointment.
Yeah, I know. I'm fortunate. I work a few contract jobs, a part-time employee with one organization. And for the most part, it's work from home. I head to the office every couple of weeks. But I have learned that I need to advocate for myself. If I'm having a bad day and I'm supposed to go to the office, I will send my leader a note. And I've done this in the past. And if a leader doesn't understand why, I'm happy to share them resources on Crohn's. Like, hey, this is why. You know, I may have be experiencing can't leave the washroom, or I'm having a blockage in my intestine, or, you know, kind of fill in the blank with that.
Yeah, filling in those blanks is important.
Just learning, and it's not easy for everyone. So for me, I've said, you know what, this is what I need.
Yeah. It makes me really heartbroken for watching what's going on with things like Tesla and Amazon and Starbucks and Trader Joe's, which are doing anti-union busting. And we do get political here, but because of health, I'm not saying who to vote for, although I think it's probably pretty obvious, but I'm just saying with union busting, it's really scary for people with invisible illnesses, because in no-fault states, you can be fired for this. It's wonderful when you can get a good boss, but this discrimination that we're talking about has real-world things that we can't even advise anyone on, because depending on which state you're in, you could be fired for being sick.
Yeah, and that just breaks my heart.
Especially when that's your health insurance.
Yeah, if that's your health insurance and you need it, yeah, we go into this, I need to protect myself. So I'm going to be quiet. I'm going to maybe just try to schedule appointments around my meetings, or do what you need to do to protect yourself, which doesn't create a productive environment. So, I mean, employers who are listening to this, you're creating a place of fear for many people who live with an invisible condition, visible illness. Like, I'm here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and our laws are very different. So
I'm so jealous.
You know, if you're discriminated against, then you know you have some legal opportunity to support you, but it's still scary, because we don't want to lose jobs.
For our international listeners, so British Columbia is up near in Canada. I'm in the United States. So when I was talking about health insurance, that's because our health insurance is tied directly to being employed 40 hours a week plus. And that's only if your company has a certain amount of people. Just to be very clear with this, and I don't know how it is over there, our health insurance is not then free if you work. We pay about $600 a month on top of my husband working full time, and then it only kicks in after $6,000 is paid, and then it only kicks in at 80%. So I just want to be really clear when we're all talking about health insurance. I know in Canada you can get private insurance. I don't think it's as much as we're paying, because we only get that $500 a month because my husband works full time. Otherwise, it'd be about $2,000 a month. So I just wanted to put that out there and be really clear, so all of our international listeners know that our health insurance in the United States is tied by working, and even if you work, you still are paying for your health insurance.
Yeah, it's even if it says here in Canada, it's free healthcare. You know, we pay taxes. I mean, it's nothing's for free.
But we pay taxes too, and we don't get that.
Yeah. You know, I think we are fortunate here, and there's a lot of news about our healthcare system, and, you know, I won't get too political about it. I'm so fortunate that I have a great medical team, great doctors, and it wasn't always the case. Had to push hard for that. And so getting that care, and, you know, I can phone up my doctor, and even if I'm unemployed, or even if I am self-employed, I can still have access to my doctors and to medications. And yes, you pay for medications. We have our whole system on that, but it's a far less stress. And so, yeah, when you think about working, being afraid to disclose, full of fear, again, from an employer perspective, how much of our brain power then is going into protecting ourselves because we're afraid? And how does that then have an effect on productivity and employee wellness and the well-being and the culture of the organization?
Mm.
So, you know, employers, you got it. There's always multiple sides to the story.
I agree. If you're looking at just a capitalist perspective of let's make the most money possible, the return on investment, scared employees are not innovative employees. And when they make mistakes, they're not going to fix them early. It's not making employers any more money by standing on necks. It actually is quite the opposite, and you're going to lose the employees and have to spend all of that money training someone new.
Absolutely. And that's maybe come back full circle even to advocacy, and maybe not necessarily advocating for yourself, but surrounding yourself by even your colleagues who want to support you and support invisible conditions, invisible disabilities, diseases in the workplace. And what can be done? How can we create these safe environments to tell employers, to tell our leaders, managers, bosses that, hey, I belong too. You know, I say to people, like here in Canada, the stats is one in five people live with a disability. So I say, oh, do you know anybody with a disability? No. It's like, well, do you know more than five people? Yes. Okay, well, you know somebody with a disability. They just have chosen not to share it with you.
And which is definitely a moment you should introspect on why someone doesn't feel safe to share.
Exactly. It's a big big stat. And when you actually break it down that way, I think I was reading in the States, it's like 1 in 4. So when you actually think about that, you look around your families, your workplaces, your friend groups, and do you know anybody who lives with something?
And you don't always know. I mean, we're also talking about mental health conditions as well.
You actually know more people who live with a disability than you actually realize. And so we make up a large part of the workforce. And so how do we feel supported? So it breaks my heart when I hear stories of that fear. Am I going to lose my health insurance or am I going to get discriminated against?
Is that what led you to start your podcast?
Yeah, I honestly started it as an outlet. You know, as I was sharing, just got tired of hiding. So I started to be a bit more vocal on LinkedIn, especially just sharing a little bit more about my disability journey and my sickness and my journey with Crohn's, and thought, I'll just release a couple episodes and see where it goes. And it took off so much faster than I expected. I thought I'd produce a couple episodes and away we go. And now, you know, I'm booking, I release once a week and I'm booking 3-4 months in advance right now. And so what I love even about your podcast is people want to tell their story, and we need to create more and more opportunities for people to share. And so that's kind of got me going, was just complete strangers reaching out to me and saying, it's now time that I step into what makes me my normal. So don't get me started on that word normal, because I don't like it, but that word normal, like I need to step into my normal. And messages every week, every other day, keep coming in. And so that's kind of what has fueled this idea, this podcast.
No, I just love what you just said of like stepping into what's normal for you now. I am curious, as I started my podcast for the same reason, and is there anything that you've seen in a theme in the people you've talked to? Is there anything that's really stood out as something that keeps getting hit over and over and over again with invisible illness?
Yeah, there's a couple themes. One is fear of being vulnerable, sharing the things that make up in us as individuals, the things that we live with. Another theme is, and hit on it a bunch of times already, is advocacy. And people are, I think, getting tired of having to put on a smile when they just don't feel like smiling. People are tired of saying, yeah, I'm actually sick, and having people not believe them. That's definitely been a theme. And there's a theme of, yeah, I'm afraid to disclose. So overcoming that fear, overcoming that shame, and into disclosure and actually how to disclose. Those have been a couple big themes, I think, over the last 25 episodes now. But there's all on the positives, it's themes of resilience, themes of, hey, you know what? This is the hand I'm dealt and I'm in it, and there's bad days and I'm going to honor those bad days, and there's good days and I'm just going to get to work. And so those stories of resilience, being able to bounce back to kind of that pre-crisis state, that is, those stories are just prevalent. That's a theme, I think, throughout all the episodes.
Are those the things you brought into your own life?
Yeah. You know, I didn't think I was the most resilient person for the most part. Over the last probably 3 or 4 years, my Crohn's was in remission. Every 8 weeks, I'd go for medication and I would come out of my doctor's office of an IV treatment and feel pretty terrible for a day or two. And then I was eating anything and everything and exercising and hiking. And the only reason I knew I had Crohn's was because I'd go to my doctor's office every 8 weeks. And then one day it came out of remission and it hit hard. And I had inflammation that I just didn't realize. And I had a blockage in my intestines. So just think of, you know, trying to pass through something as narrow as maybe like the tip of your pen. It was so excruciatingly painful. And those started happening more and more frequently. So we tried different medications. And if I would sit for long periods of time, I would get a blockage. So I was sitting and standing and moving. And every time we'd go on a road trip, I knew that I was going to be sick for a couple of days. And this went on for about 4 years until it came to a point where I was just done. I phoned up some friends and just was like, I don't know what to do anymore. And, you know, through friends and family and my church, and they encouraged me to keep pushing on and keep fighting and advocating and, you know, going for so many colonoscopies. Yeah, if you need tips on colonoscopies, hit me up. I've compiled a big list. Maybe there's a book coming out in the future about this.
But Rare, give us our top five. I mean, everyone who's listening to this is probably going to have one sometime.
Yeah, you know, what the doctor says, eat a low residue diet a couple weeks before, do it. It's going to help you in the prep. For me, drink, it's called Peglite. It's horrible. It's fruit flavored. This this jug of powder, the powder at the bottom. You fill it with 4 liters of water, and it says it's fruit flavored. And there's no fruit flavor. It's just, I don't even know how to describe the flavor. It just, it automatically triggers your gag reflexes. So what you do is you chill that. You get it cold. You put your cup in the fridge. You put a giant straw in the fridge. You got to do that. You're going to be empty, and now you're filling your body full of this cold liquid. I usually wear about 3 sweaters about, you know, after a couple glasses, because it's so cold. So you got to keep your body temperature warm. And a tip I learned was every time you drink a glass of this liquid, I chase it with a warm cup of apple juice. And some people are like, oh, that sounds gross, but it tastes good. It just, yeah. So that's a few of my tips. And yeah, make sure you are empty, because your doctor will tell you if you part with your scope and say, yeah, you didn't do the prep properly, you will have to go back and do it again. And you don't want to. So follow those instructions. I think those are my big tips.
Very good advice there. We were talking about advocacy a lot, and we were talking about your podcast. And I want to pull those two things together, because if there's one thing we've learned in human history, stories are the way to get information across and hold longest. What are you finding in storytelling? Are you writing books? Are you doing the podcast? How are you getting the story out? What's the message of your story that you really want to like tattoo across the sky?
Oh, yeah. The goal is to build this as a nonprofit. We want to build this as a nonprofit publication and education organization to end the stigma of invisible conditions by empowering voices and igniting social change. That's our purpose. Memorized it. I hope you do too. Everyone does too, right? We have to empower voices. There's two ways that we can drive social change, in two broad ways: telling stories and educate people. And so if we create places like yourself and your podcast where people feel comfortable enough to share, we will educate. So the podcast, there's some blogs. My wife and I, we're working on a book draft. And so there's one really talking about some invisible condition etiquette. So that's going to be a fun read. And then the colonoscopy prep. And,
oh, please, let's put it there. What etiquette? Aside from you don't look sick.
Yeah, just, you know, we're going to really talk about just the language that we use and the language that we can help others to correct. Because how often, maybe you've heard this as well, is, oh, but you look fine. And do we just smile and kind of nod? But what we should be saying is, well, thanks, but you didn't actually ask me how I'm doing. So stop stepping into that and helping others, maybe through some humor, correct their language. And that's within our workplaces, our schools, with our friends. And so imagine just being able to pass over a little quick, easy read to someone and say, hey, before you tell me I should eat another salad, maybe you should read this. And so that's one. Somebody told me that once was I was in getting ready for surgery, massive flare. I was on a liquid diet. I was drinking Ensure, you know, meal replacements. I was drinking about 8 a day because that's all I could consume. And somebody said, oh, you know what? There's this raw vegetable diet. You should give it a try. I said, you know, thank you. That would kill me, actually. But I appreciate that, you know. And another person said, hey, Tim, you should go on a carnivore diet. All meat. That will cure your Crohn's. And I said, well, first of all, there's no cure for Crohn's. Second, I'm in a massive flare. And if I ate a steak, it'd probably rupture my intestines and I could die. So, but thanks. I really appreciate that. The look on people's faces after you kind of correct them is, do I say comical, or there's some shock to it? But, and then the colonoscopy one is just playing around with that title. Working title is A Peek Inside. So your guide to colonoscopy prep. So that's going to be a fun one to read. But most importantly, I think, is education. So becoming a nonprofit here in Canada, it's how do we benefit society, not just through media, but through grassroots events and seminars, webinars, whatever it is. And so partnering with some local nonprofits, that's the goal, is to bring voices into our communities and creating places and spaces for people to share.
I would just like to add, do not ever grab someone's wheelchair. Never, ever just kidnap a wheelchair user by grabbing their handle.
Oh, I can't imagine. No, don't do that.
My favorite one, yes. Or please don't pray over someone. You do not know the religion. Don't do that. Geared the heck out of my 2-year-old. That was a lot for my baby.
Yeah, you know, there's things that are good to say. And what I've learned from others on the podcast, and it just kind of affirmed what I believe as well, is if you don't know what to say, just don't say anything. And if you don't know what to say, all you have to say is, thanks for trusting me with that. I don't know what to say.
I want to highlight that. That is, I think you just gave people the best idea ever. That's beautiful.
Yeah, maybe it'll be a 1-page book. Honestly, somebody has said this to me was, you know, if somebody wants to offer advice, the story becomes about them. They want to be the hero of the story. Maybe they've even then shut down and stopped listening because they're, and I'm guilty of this, and it's so important to catch yourself, because we then, and I go to this often, is, okay, how can I fix this? What advice can I offer? What book did I read that it can offer? We don't know if somebody needs advice, needs to read another book, needs anything. So just pause and say, thanks for trusting me. What do you need from me? Or I don't know what to say. Or, hey, are you looking for some advice? And somebody might say, no, just wanted you to listen. Honor that and hard stop there.
This interview is completely worth it for me just for the last 30 seconds. Aside from how great this whole interview has been, that right there, I'm going to write on some very large piece of paper to remind myself to not be the person who jumps in with the advice. That's great. Thank you. That's really good.
Well, I'm guilty of this. Often my wife and I, it's kind of a joke now, is this a listening conversation or should I be, you know, offering my input? And she'll start a conversation. It's just, I just need you to listen. Or, hey, she'll just send me a big text message. Just, I just need you to read this. I don't need any rebuttal. I don't need any, it's just, and I'll just reply with like a heart emoji, because it's like, hey, sometimes you just need to get something off your chest, off your mind. And that's it. And so, you know, obviously having people that you trust to be able to share that stuff with. But even if you're sharing with somebody who just asked you how you're doing and you say, not great, don't go to this place of, oh, I've tried this X, Y, or Z or Z, and you should try that too. Don't fill in the blank. Just, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm hitting this one, hit the nail on the head, you know, many times, and now I'm going through the piece of wood, but it's just something that honestly was that catalyst for Invisible Condition, my project.
Just that alone is something that's so usable for everyone. And I think you said your children are small, mine are grown, and one's still a teenager. And I have to say, if you start conversations with, did you just need me to listen or did you want my advice? They will talk to you. It's amazing how much your teenager will talk to you if you're not centering yourself there. And it's just something I have to remember the time.
Yeah,
when they say, no, I don't want advice. And I'm like literally bleeding inside my mouth from like biting my cheek.
Yeah. And you've got like six things in your mind of like, well, why would you do that? And why don't you do this or try this or try that? And it's just, oh, it's so hard sometimes to just take a deep breath, you know, count to four, count to 10, whatever it is. But again, as soon as we start going to offering solutions, we're not listening anymore. And this concept or this idea of active listening, where you're giving your 100% attention, you're clearing your mind, you're listening to what they say, you're repeating back what they say. That's a good technique if you struggle with that active listening. But again, as soon as we start trying to think of how we can support or how can I add my opinion to something, we often, and I'm generalizing here, stop going into that deep listening state. So how do we pull ourselves into that state of, you've got my undivided attention and I'm just going to listen?
That is an incredible skill and you seem to be very good at it. So I'm thrilled to listen to your podcast.
It's a work in progress. I call it authentic curiosity.
Sure you don't want that to be the title of your book?
Maybe that's another one I should write.
That'd be a good one.
Too many ideas and not enough time, I think. You know, just this idea of getting authentically curious, right? If you don't care what someone's living with or going through, then stop there. Just don't ask. But that's a terrible thing to do, in my opinion. You know, maybe you don't have the time. Maybe you need to say, hey, can we pick this up later? But get curious. Hey, you live with Crohn's? Tell me about that. How does it affect your life? You know, I hear diet affects it. What have you found? What are your symptoms? What are your triggers? What do you do when you're feeling good? And what do you do when you're feeling bad, when you're having a bad day? How was surgery? You know, just ask questions, because you know what that does? It educates you. And it allows someone to feel comfortable and vulnerable enough to share. And the person receiving it is now educated on Crohn's. And I tell the story probably way too many times, but I was working at a company. I ended up in the hospital, had an abscess in my intestine. Basically, my intestine was leaking into the tissue around, and had to phone my boss, my leader, the CEO of the company, and say, hey, I'm sorry, I can't come to work. I'm in the hospital. And I had Crohn's, and he didn't know this before. He phoned me the next day and said, you know what? I didn't know anything about Crohn's. So I stayed up super late and researched everything I could about Crohn's. Thank you for sharing me that you have Crohn's. Now I have a better understanding. When you get back to work, we're going to work on a stress reduction plan with you, because I know that's a trigger. So thank you.
I'm just trying to hold that a boss did that. I literally started businesses because my bosses were so mean.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to erase and eradicate ignorance and those who are just focused on the bottom line. But there are good companies out there. There's great people out there. And it might take time to find those folks, but they're out there.
It's just a matter of getting them into positions of power. I think most people are generally good and really want to help. It's just a matter of getting the people who are wise and want to help into the positions of power.
Yeah. You know, I spent some time in HR as well as operations and leadership teams. And, you know, the leadership team that really sets the tone for the organization. I mean, you can have your values, but unless you're living those values, they're just words on a wall. And so if you really care about your employees, care about your stakeholders, you know, if we just think of stakeholders as everyone, not just our customers, what are we doing to support them? And this kind of goes right back to companies who are trying to bust the unions. How are you supporting your employees? If you really care about them, what are you doing? And, you know, maybe a leader or CEO is listening to this and maybe it's a good time to really just do some introspection and do some thinking. Because guess what, leaders? You have employees with a disability, disease, condition. You just probably don't know it.
What are some of the things that HR could do right now? If we have HR listening right now, what are some things they could just do? I just did a talk at Lawrence Livermore Labs about invisible illness, and their HR was concerned that they don't know who's sick. They don't know how to reach out. They don't know even what things to implement, because invisible illness can be so many different things that need so many different types of things. So what could HR do to help people feel safe to come forward? And what kind of things could be implemented that could be good cross-board?
First that comes to mind is look at your, if you have a DE&I statement, does the word disability in there? There was a study out of an HBR study, it's a number of years old, that said only 4% of companies that have a DE&I statement actually include the word disability. So start there. Include us in there. So start there. Have an accommodation process that makes sense, that's straightforward, that isn't, you know, 62 pages of documentation and full of like a disposition of, you know, an interrogation of, are you sure you live with something? Are you sure that's what you need? Sure, there's some cost to finding the right accommodation, but most accommodations cost less than, I think, what's the value? Like $500? But people aren't going to disclose. Like what you said is, oh, well, we don't know who needs support. You know, when you're giving your talk about your talk, well, that's might be because people don't trust the organization enough to disclose. So what are you doing to increase trust? Bringing you and Monica, that's a great place to start. Now what? What's the follow-up to that? Is there an employee resource group? Is there a place for maybe to ask questions anonymously? Start there. There's very simple things that you can implement. And have the CEO, the COO, your leadership team talk about this. Maybe it's at a town hall. Maybe it's in an employee newsletter, whatever it is in your employee communication. Because if it's not coming from the top, it's really hard to implement and drive change. There's some organizations that employees just get together and say, we're going to drive that change. But there's also, it's like, oh, am I going to have a job at the end of the week? So HR, you really need to push it to come from the top. It has to come from the top. So there's a few practical ways and hard ways. And you know, I'm not sponsored by this company. I just love what they do. It's called disclo.com, DISCLO.com. And they make the accommodation process so simple. I've had their head of accommodation on my podcast, Joshua Peterson. He's a phenomenal guy. He's a Crohn's buddy, a list of Crohn's. And we met through the power of social media and just love what they're doing. And they're disrupting the disability inclusion space. So if you're a leader, check out disclo.com. Even if you're an employee, they actually on their website have a place where you can trigger a notice to go to your HR team or whoever's email address you say. It's like, hey, someone in your organization has been asking about Disclo. Maybe it's time to look at your accommodation or something along those lines. So you can actually trigger that anonymously. And would you like to set up a conversation with Disclo? So again, not sponsored by them, just love what they're doing.
That's brilliant. And hey, if they have a good town hall, they might go viral for the right reasons instead of the usual reasons town halls go viral on the old internets there. I was curious because you've had a lot of expertise in HR. If you could wave a magic wand and have all the power, what would you change in a company? What things would you do to make it right?
Oh, where do we start? I think, do I got an hour and a half for this?
You can have as much time as you want. I might start wincing very soon, but that's fine.
Yeah. It's like the power of editing. It just edited most of it out. No.
Edit the looks of agony off my face. It'll be great.
Yeah. You know, if I could wave a magic wand, I'd be asking myself a question. How could I create a space where everyone can truly belong and perform at their best? That's a question I'd be asking. I wouldn't be asking, how much money can I make this quarter? You know, that's a byproduct of good work and obviously having a good product to fit the market. But if you have a product that fits a market and you're making revenue, ask yourself, is this a place, is this an organization that everyone could truly belong and feel welcome, feel like they could bring their whole self to work? That's what I would change. I'd create a space where if someone had a doctor's appointment at 2 p.m., I would trust that they're going to meet their deadlines. And if they were off for a couple hours, that they're going to make up the time if they need to make up the time. That's what I would change. Less of this bureaucracy of I'm a manager, so I'm going to manage you down to the minute for the hours that I have, and create a place where, hey, here's our goals. Here's what we need to achieve. Let's go. Let's have some fun. Let's get there. It's not impossible to create that environment. It takes work, and sometimes it's hard, but yeah, that word belonging just came right to my mind, is creating a space where we can show up as our true selves.
I love what you did there, and I've never seen anyone else do it, so I just wanted to point it out. When I asked you what you wanted to change, if you could just magic wand, you came up with a question to ask. And I love that, because I think a lot of the times that I do this myself, or I'm going to come up with the solution because I need to come up with the solution. But you took that out and you went right to asking the question, which will give you the actual answer for how to fix it. And that's such a wonderful place to start, is from curiosity.
Yeah, thank you for that. Curiosity is I think, what fuels our workplaces. And if we're stifled and have no curiosity, if we're feeling that pressure to always have the answers, is that real curiosity, or is that just the culture that we've created? And maybe it's that culture of fear, because if I don't have an answer, what might happen? So that reframing, and man, it's not easy. There's not every situation should have a question to follow up, you know, like, hey, kids, can you clean up your room? You know, I hope that they wouldn't ask you a question about it, but that's a silly example. But
no, it's a very good example. I like that one. And if you ever want like unsolicited advice on that, I have a we're a little neuro spiciness here in this household. And the way we've done that with the rooms to avoid the power struggle is I ask the next thing you do, because my child hates being interrupted. They get hyper-focused on things and it just feels like torture to be torn away. So is this going to be over in the next 10 minutes or 20 minutes is the question. And then, okay, 10 to 20 minutes. Excellent. In 20 minutes, the next thing I need you to do is this. And that has led to, can I tell you how many fights have been done now? We do not argue like we did.
I love that. Okay, I'm going to take that. I'm going to take that note. But you said something, Monica, that really I think is... It's a word that's not just in our workplaces, but in society, it's power struggle. That word is triggering for me right now, and I'm not sure why, but you said like we need to avoid that power struggle. If we take that into our workplaces, how do we avoid that power struggle? And that's having a conversation.
Now, to circle back to what you had said, because I thought I'm just going to be thinking about that for the next few days, is the asking questions before. And then what you had just said about of wanting to be the one to come up with the answer. And so you're trying to be first in that answer instead of curious and actually learning the best way. And that goes right along with that power struggle. And I feel like I just got 5 years of therapy because I'm starting to realize I do that all the time. Because I'm scared if I don't have the right answer, I'm not smart, I shouldn't be in this room. You know, it's all of those fears that are in the back. That imposter syndrome is always like, at least always for me, always just constantly sounding off in the back of my head. That's just a really, I mean, thank you for the therapy. I appreciate the free therapy here.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, anytime. Yeah, if we want to do another one, another recording. Yeah.
Don't say that. I will take you up on it.
I love it.
So. I have so many different places I want to go, and we're running low on time. I think the one thing I wanted to ask you, because it does go back into HR, and I'm fascinated by what I call my leash, which is how far out I can go before I am yanked back by physical issues. For you, it's a much more, when you're not in remission, it's a much more of a leash. What can be done to create some sort of space? Do you have tools that used to help you? I know there's a whole bunch of really cool apps now that tell you exactly where bathrooms are in public buildings, which wish they're a little bit more wheelchair accessible on that one, but it's a step. And then before I ADD and forget, the next thing I will want to ask you, which I've forgotten three separate times and it keeps screaming back to me, is how to get to where you want to go with your vision of your nonprofit. So I think we'll start with the what tools you've used to be able to extend your ability to go out in the world, and then how to get you to where you need to go, and not the other way.
Yeah, no, that's two good places to go. And speaking of places to go, love the little segue.
We will do all the dad jokes here.
I love it. Yes, my kids all cringe at that one. I plan my routes with washrooms. You know, in the neighborhood we live in a really small kind of little community within a big city, and close to the waterfront and lots of parks and community centers. So I know where all the washrooms are. If I am needing to go to the office, or I need to go meet a client or a friend, I really watch what I eat. I know where the washrooms are along the way. And so I stick to pretty much the same routine and the same routes. That is what has gotten me through. Yeah, there's been some embarrassing moments, absolutely. But I know that this is just the hand I'm dealt with, and there's going to be more embarrassing moments. And so, you know, never leave home without a few little supplies in my backpack, to be honest.
You feel safe or comfortable sharing what those supplies are?
Yeah, so I'll carry, you know, sometimes a change of clothes, I'll carry some wipes, I'll carry some medication. I found most businesses are very accommodating when I say, hey, I live with Crohn's, may I please use your washroom? Even in the pandemic, I remember going for a walk with a friend, and that's when all the coffee shops were closed or serving out their windows. And I said to one shop, I said, look, I'm about to have an accident. I live with Crohn's. May I please use your washroom? And they unlocked the door and let me in. And yeah, I'll never forget that business who really supported me in that. So that's how I've been able to navigate. Just always carry and ensure a meal supplement in case I'm, you know, there's sometimes I dread when somebody says, hey, let's go grab lunch. I still watch what I eat. And there's some things that aren't good for my gut. So, you know, I just make sure I have some food with me, that food that I can't digest. And what was the second point? It was, you know, where do I see Invisible Condition going?
Yes, but I just want one quick little clarification for you, because I'm just asking for myself. What would you do for airplanes, for a flight?
Oh, I haven't been on a flight since coming out of remission. And honestly, it gives me a crazy amount of anxiety, especially the takeoff landing. We've thought about going on a trip, but, you know, we'll stick to driving for now, to be honest, until we figure out what is going on in my gut. So the medication I'm on is, we think it's not working properly. And so I'm dealing with some inflammation and some other side effects that are troublesome. And so until that is sorted out, there's no travel out of province. You know, thinking about medical insurance and flights, it's just too much anxiety. And anxiety for me is a big trigger.
So. I forgot your medical insurance for coming over here to the U.S.
Yeah, need to get insurance. We were going to go down for a day trip just to Seattle and decided not to, just because it's just too much anxiety for me.
Very much hear that. And travel tip for all of our international people coming to the United States, please, 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 please get health insurance. Just need to let you all know it was $8,000 the last time I went to the emergency room for 3 hours. So when you're getting your travel insurance, it's really, really important, because it can be into the hundreds of thousands of dollars here in the U.S. So
yes.
And sure. So where I want to go next, and oh, real quick tip for anyone dealing with incontinence issues, especially if you're someone who has ovaries, the period underwear is not just for period. It's amazing. And wow, that's a very helpful thing on road trips and other stuff. Just wanted to throw that out there because no one told me.
Yeah, I have friends who live with IBD, and same thing. They've said the period underwear or different types of absorbent underwear. Absolutely. No shame in that.
No. And so like, and it's thin and it doesn't feel weird. And it's just, especially if you're talking about like a teenager or someone who has to like change in like a gym thing, or you have to change in public. Like these are little things that can really sort of, as we're all dealing with self-acceptance, we all still have our moments. Mm-hmm. And nice to add to those. The thing that I want to ask you about, because I'm very passionate about pushing voices forward, what do you need to get your nonprofit to a place where you're doing the most good?
Yeah, it's subscribers to the podcast, subscribers to the newsletter, downloads. You know, that just amplifies voices. Donations. I am my nonprofit status, and then here in Canada, going for charity status, and that is a costly legal structure or legal endeavor. So if someone is listening to this and loves what we're doing, you know, I'd love for you to consider donating. That would be great. And if you have a story to tell, I'm launching a written interview series, just because I'm so backed up with a podcast. We're going to launch a written interview series this week. So with a list of questions for you to just talk about advocacy or if you're a caregiver, if there will be an opportunity for you to share that as well. So, you know, head to the site and just subscribe to the newsletter and for updates. I think that's just really going to help us continue to grow and amplify voices, empower voices, and ignite that social change.
And that is amazing. And please plug your podcast, because we want everyone to go over there. This is not a competitive thing. Like, please listen to. So your podcast, I believe, is called Invisible Conditions. And I only say believes because I am totally planning on going and listening to everything, but we've had a family emergency, so I will be doing that today. But it's Invisible Conditions. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's called The Invisible Condition Podcast.
And you could find that on Spotify or, I believe, Apple Music or Google Music, any of your podcasts.
So you could search that on anywhere you get your podcast.
Excellent. Yes. And go listen, donate if you can. I really believe in your vision. I think it's important. So I always end every podcast with my favorite question, which is anything under $100 that just made your life better.
Oh, I loved that question. I saw your list of questions to prep. And
I think it's pulled from Tim Ferriss. I think that was a steal.
You know, it's a good steal. I might ask a version of that on my episode. Honestly, a product, it was, I think, around $100 or just slightly over. It's called a Tushy. So it is a bolt-on bidet to your toilet. It is, I don't know, we go through so much less toilet paper in our house now, thanks to me, but it is such a good product. I rave about it. So yeah, there you go. Tushy. I think it's tushy.com.
Hey, anyone who's ever even had the stomach flu knows that that's the painful thing to experience.
Yes, yeah.
Without having like a bidet. I don't know why the U.S. and the whole West Coast did not figure this one out.
No, yeah. Paper monopoly. I don't know what happened there, but the bolt-on bidet, hey, it honestly, I think...
Toilet paper, darn it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, 7 minutes or so to install. Like, it is crazy simple. And just make sure you turn your water off before you do that. And so, pro tip there. But it's easy to install, easy to use. You'll be happy with it.
I cannot thank you enough for your time. This has been wonderful getting to know you. We've been having some big changes on the podcast. So if you are a longtime listener, go chat with us and tell us what you want and need. We've had a lot of shuffling around. Until then, be kind, be gentle, be a badass, and go do some advocacy and some storytelling.
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about today's episode, including show notes, transcripts, and more, please visit invisiblenotbroken.com. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also support this show by heading over to our Patreon or by sharing these episodes. We are non-advertising, and our growth is thanks to you listeners. Thank you to our hosts, Monica and Tim, for a wonderful discussion. This episode was edited by Luke Spine and me, Ariana Alter. Last but not least, be kind, be gentle, and be a badass.